llenarla.
To the theme song for Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. That's Youssou N'Dour from Senegal, one of the most famous of the African musicians who, by the way, was supposed to tour the United States, but in protest against U.S. actions against Afghanistan and Iraq, he canceled his tour. And we hope that Youssou N'Dour does come to the United States, so all of you who aren't familiar with his work can get to hear this marvelous and political musician. That's Youssou N'Dour, and it's from the album about South Africa, Mandela, and that's Ndubeam. Ralph Schoenman and I are here with you tonight until 9 p.m. For those of you who were with us last week, our premium is the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. And those of you who were here last week got to hear excerpts, and today we're going to play a few more excerpts, some that weren't broadcast last week. So the pattern of state terror is our gift to you for $100 donation to WBAI. And we have a special premium, too. That's the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, along with the technique of infamy, Ralph's commentary on the 9/11 Commission. And that's for a $150 contribution to WBAI. The number to call is 212-209-2950. Those of you expecting us to have been on at 5, I hope you enjoyed the program and are ready now to donate to WBAI. Without WBAI, Taking Aim wouldn't be on the air. 120 original programs we've been preparing, and you've been have been made available to you. For a $50 membership, you can become a contributor, a listener, receive the folio, participate in all the voting and special discounts. $25 is the student low-income membership, and again, if you can, the $100 premium, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. This was a presentation by Ralph and me at the first phase of the 9/11 inquiry, not the bogus 9/11 commission that's been broadcast over the air and that's taking place in Washington, but an actual 9/11 inquiry by investigators and by participants that took place in San Francisco, is going to begin in Toronto, and then we'll come to New York, and we hope to see all of you there. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. For your $100 contribution and for a bonus contribution of $150, we're going to add the technique of infamy, Ralph Schoenman's contribution with Bonnie Faulkner on the KPFA's Guns and Butter program, a one-hour CD. Please call now, 212-209-2950. We're going to play many excerpts, and we want those phones ringing while the excerpts are on, because remember, you can have these CDs and then share them with your friends, your family, your colleagues throughout the world. Those of you listening via the Internet at www.wbai.org, Remember, now is the moment. Now is the time for you to step up to the plate and dial 212-209-2950. Ralph, do you have something to...
Well, it's important that we emphasize that the information that you're going to be hearing on these CDs is not available in any other form, and that what we do is to expose the systemic and systematic lies that require the authorities require in order to push their program of persistent imperial conquest and class war at home. You know, we've been treated rather recently to the bogus videotape of the beheading of Nick Berg by a man named al-Zarqawi. Unfortunately, al-Zarqawi has been acknowledged has been dead for some time. We'll go into some of the more particulars about the faking of this video, but it's by way of showing that the evidence that we present about the nature of 9/11 and the terrorist state and its intimidation of our people and its class war is the ideological integument of the rule of 1% of the population owning 90% of the national wealth. We ask you to support this station. We ask you to support Taking Aim. Support Free Speech Radio. Support WBAI. Make your contribution. Obtain these videos, which have indispensable information, not obtainable in any other form. Keep the show and the programming and the information coming.
Now, we've got a late start today, so in order for us to play all the excerpts we've planned for you, get that to the phone, and get to the phone while we're playing them. 212-209-2950. I set a goal for all of us, you and ourselves, to raise during these next hour and 45 minutes. 212-209-2950. Max, our engineer, is going to start the CDs with the beginning of my presentation at the 9/11 inquiry.
After the bombings that took place in Madrid on March 11th, 911 days after the events of September 11th, I decided to speak about who's the enemy now. Who's the enemy now is a headline that blared across Time magazine on the March 29th issue in an article by Johanna McCary. And in it she states, "New networks of jihadists emerge faster than the United States and its allies can arrest or kill them. Counterterrorism experts believe that a new, more elusive generation of extremists, apparently inspired by Al-Qaeda's ruthless vision, men like Jamal Zugan, 30 years old, a cell phone salesman arrested for the Madrid bombings, and Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, 37 years old, the Jordanian suspected of orchestrating violence in Iraq, that these two have taken up the banner, and so have others like them. Barely recognizable," she continues, "even to officials who make a living tracking terrorists, the new jihadists proved in Madrid that they can evade detection while they hatch their plots. And no one knows where they're going to strike next." So writes Johanna McCreary. And this is something that was orchestrated and played out throughout the press, whether you read the New York Times, the San Francisco Chronicle, Time Magazine, or Newsweek, striking fear and terror in the minds of people worldwide was more important to our capitalist rulers than any evidence. In fact, Jamal Zugan had stated that he was home asleep, and he had been tracked by intelligence agents in Europe since August 2001. And those loosely connected to him, such as the Syrian-born Abu Imad el-Din Barkas Yakers, known as Abu Dada, had been tried, actually, in Spain, but no evidence ever linked him to the events of 9/11. Now, across Time magazine, it stated, "Who's the enemy now?" And it discussed what had taken place in Madrid and what would take place worldwide. But if we look on the internet at the Israeli intelligence weekly, Debka, which we refer to often in Taking Aim, on February 25th, just a couple of weeks before, Debka wrote, "Al-Qaeda builds a Euro army." So the events of Madrid had the stage set by the article that appeared in Debka. And I quote now from Debka. "Warnings of Al-Qaeda's continuing threat came Tuesday, February 24th, from Washington and London, as well as by one of its top leaders. Addressing the Senate Intelligence Committee, CIA Director George Tenet spoke of the spread of Al-Qaeda's radical agenda to local groups who now threaten the United States and are capable of 9/11 scale attacks. British Interior Secretary David Blunkett announced new stringent measures throughout Great Britain to combat terror because, he said, a terrorist attack on Britain was, quote, inevitable. Now, the reason was clearly stated by Debka's title, Al-Qaeda builds a Euro army. Note, this is February 25th. And they explain, Al-Qaeda has been discovered by Debka's intelligence sources to be recruiting manpower in Europe at a brisk pace in a push into the continent personally advocated by Osama bin Laden. The European arena, continues Debka, is showing a dangerous dynamism. And this is what it shows in terms of the network of Al-Qaeda and other groups. According to French counterintelligence, Al-Qaeda has recruited in France alone between 35 and 45,000 men and is organizing them into military-style units. Remember, this is February 25th. They meet regularly for training in the use of weapons and explosives, combat tactics, and indoctrination, and are controlled from local and district command centers on the organization's National French Command. Note this, a National French Command for the Al-Qaeda network. Then we have Germany. Al-Qaeda, according to Debka, has recruited 25,000 to 30,000 men in Germany alone, plus the 35 to 45,000 in France. And then the British domestic intelligence agency, MI5, states that there are 10,000 Al-Qaeda operatives in Britain. And they state this is causing Blunkett ample concern. So we have 35 to 45,000 plus 30,000 plus 10,000, and this doesn't even count the Balkans. Because, Debka states, Italy itself doesn't have very many, and it doesn't have to, because the Balkan countries of Albania, Kosovo, and Macedonia are the source of weapons, money, false documents, and these go out to other European bases. And it continues, finally, by stating unknown numbers are being enlisted in Belgium, Switzerland, Holland, Sweden, and Norway. Add it all up, and you have over 100,000 new Al-Qaeda terrorists throughout Europe. But it gets more serious. Recruitment across Europe, Debka says, continues apace and in greater secrecy than ever because they are building a Euro army. But note, these are not Arabs. These are not people from Algeria. These are not people from Morocco. They are not from Saudi Arabia. These are native Europeans freshly converted to Islam. And it is called the white recruitment drive, or quote, coffee shop conscription. Operational cells. I am telling you, this is straight from Israeli intelligence. Operational cells are recruiting these agents, and they patronize ordinary cafes on the high streets of Europe's major cities, where they blend into the crowd. Consider what this means if you're a European. It means anytime you go into a cafe and you look over your shoulder, who are you seeing really? None other than another of the white recruitment drive or the coffee shop conscription. Unit-level meetings or training sessions are attended by 30 to 40 men. Imagine all this intelligence they have. And it takes place under the cover of social activity, such as holiday camps in the remote parts of Europe. Here we have, who is the enemy now? According to Depka, the enemy is everyone.
This is Taking Aim with
Roshan
and Maya Schoen. You've been listening to the beginning of a presentation of the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Presentations made by Ralph Schoen and myself at the initial phase one part of the 9/11 inquiry. And this weekend, the second part taking place in Toronto, Ralph will be speaking at, and then in a few months, the inquiry is moving on to New York. Meanwhile, you can have these riveting presentations as our gift to you for your $100 contribution. There are two CDs with high fidelity editing and fully tracked. 212-209-2950. Now's the time to show your support for Taking Aim and WBAI, and as well have this gift. For a $150 contribution, we have the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, plus a very special one-hour show that you haven't heard yet, haven't even heard excerpts of, and this is The Technique of Infamy. It's a one-hour interview with Ralph Schoenman, his commentary on the 9/11 commissions, the official commissions, not our people's inquiry. 212-209-2950. Remember, this is the best gift you can make to yourself all year long, and particularly to sustain WBAI in these rough, tough times. It's WBAI that lets you know about activities such as the Lynn Stewart defense and your opportunities to be in the courtroom and participate and assist Lynn Stewart in her important defense against John Ashcroft's prosecution, and it's really a defense of all of us. This is where you can learn about the Million Worker March that's going to take place in Washington on October 16th. This is where you learn about the anti-war demonstrations and the activities in solidarity with the Palestinian people and other peoples around the world, the Haitian people and peoples throughout Africa, and the demonstration that's taking place June 5th in Washington and in other cities across the country. 212-209-2950, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Let's not forget Madrid, 911 days after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. Ralph.
Well, the attacks on Madrid, brothers and sisters, were a preparation for what is being orchestrated in the established press almost every day. U.S. News and World Report for May 24th has revealed that the top security officials in Washington are already preparing for what is called the inevitable attack on of a biological or chemical nature that will dwarf 9/11. And the cancellation of the elections as projected, all of the testing of the waters, as we so often described it, for imposing martial law in this country. The authorities are under siege. They're under siege by our disaffected population. And they, in turn, are waging class war with fake operations designed to intimidate, terrorize, and to create the conditions for massive repression. That's the reality. That's the record. If you listen carefully, brothers and sisters, to these official 9/11 hearings, they were simply a bully platform, a bully pulpit for the orchestration of the theme that the terrorists are coming, the terrorists are coming, they're everywhere. Talk about your ultimate conspiracy theory. They're hiding under every bush. They're drinking a latte in every coffee shop. They're around the corner. They're on the verge of poisoning our water supply, of unleashing biological weapons and chemical weapons and suitcase nukes at any and every juncture. Cities have been spotted. One of the themes that emerged in the 9/11 hearings was the necessity for what was called a national threat alert threshold, whereby they are going to grade every person in the United States, not just the prospect of a terror attack, but the prospect of every one of us being a predisposed terrorist. We'll all have a color gradation and a digitized gradation, which is going to be systematized on the basis of what was being discussed in these official 9/11.
Well, Ralph, that's their plans for everyone who takes a flight in the United States. And going against the privacy of information, several of the airlines participated with the federal government in the experimentation of this flight coding. And now $15 billion is on the table. $15 billion is on the table to create a virtual border. In other words, investigating anyone and everyone who possibly is going to come into the United States through legal means.
Even
the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. You can't be without this program, this two CD set, analyzing with the false flag operations here and abroad. The participation, actually the fomenting of a state of terror in Italy, and that I go into in great detail. Not only the bombing at the Bologna railway station, which is the precursor, actually has the signature of what took place in Madrid. The bombing in the Bologna railway station, where 85 people were killed and 200 were injured, one of the considered up to that time one of the worst atrocities in Europe since the end of World War II. This took place in 1980, and yet there was a 15-year period of these bombings, which I trace and through the work of many researchers traced to the United States itself and setting up this network, this terror apparatus to destabilize Italy.
The book The Puppet Masters documents that for over 40 years across Italy, the United States Central Intelligence Agency and Italian intelligence were carrying on literally systematic bombings and terror operations. Very much like those that occurred in Madrid, but for a period of 40 years to prevent the prospect of a coalition government between the socialist and communist parties, to intimidate the Italian working class, to break the will of the trade unions in Italy, all under the false flag cover either of Red Brigades or other organizations that were either invented by the intelligence agencies or totally controlled and penetrated by them. This is not a question of speculation. This is overwhelmingly documented.
And documented in the Italian Parliament itself. The man who created the network originally was CIA Director Alan Dulles, a stay-behind network after World War II, which evolved, and the person put in charge of it was William Colby. William Colby, the architect of the Phoenix program in Vietnam. Now remember, in order to get the details, you have to donate $100 to WBAI, your station. Keep sustaining it. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, your $100 contribution, 212-209-2950. Now, if you are one of the 1%, lucky enough, 1%, who have been able to sustain a high income in this country, step forward and give your contribution of $5,000, $10,000, $20,000 to keep WBAI on the air. Because even if you have that income, you still may have and share our goals and our politics. 212-209-2950. Donate what you can and as often as you can. Ralph?
Well, we want to make clear that the pattern of terror, state terror, from 9/11 to Madrid continues. The Bush administration and the Democrats in Congress, side by side with them, are constantly orchestrating the theme, as I state, that an inevitable attack will occur. And they're setting us up, brothers and sisters. And they're setting us up for a very particular reason, because they are preparing not billions, not tens of billions, but trillions of dollars yet to be expended on their permanent war and on their repressive apparatus. And today we have Hillary Clinton joining with Lindsey Graham, the Republican from South Carolina, in calling for the headline is in CNN, a larger U.S. military. We cannot continue to stretch our troops, both active duty, guard, and reserve, to the breaking point. This is Hillary Clinton. And stating on Fox News, we are sounding the alarm. We need a much larger active duty military. They want to increase the troops in Iraq. They want to increase the troops throughout the region. They are preparing for a strike against Iran to take out its presumptive nuclear capacity. They are upping the ante, brothers and sisters, and to accomplish that, they're going to have to stage things in this country as well.
Well, you heard it first on Taking Aim with our programs, Who's Next?, and taking out the Saudi, and the specials we had for WBAI on World War IV and why war. But now is the time for the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Your $100 contribution, 212-209-2950. And for $150, we throw in the added bonus of the Technique of Infamy, the Ralph's commentary on the 9/11 commissions. Ralph?
And yes, indeed. What we do as well, we are preparing information that arms us for struggle, brothers and sisters. I'm the chair, co-chair, along with the brothers in Longshore Workers Union Local 10 for the Million Worker March on Washington on October 16th. We've now obtained the endorsement of trade union federations across the United States, district council 1707 in New York with President Barbara Stokely and 11 AFSCME unions, the chair of the National Teamster National Black Caucus, Chris Silvera, and his Long Island City Local 808 of the Teamsters, replicated across the country, the Longshore Division of the Longshore Workers of the entire West Coast. Our West Coast from San Diego to Anchorage, Alaska, endorsing the Million Worker March. We are on the move, brothers and sisters, for the fight back. A huge mobilization of working people, of activists and the poor, answering the summons of Dr. Martin Luther King 36 years ago.
And a key part of that fight back is WBAI, our communication, our way of reaching you and you of reaching us. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. For your $100 contribution, 212-209-2950. At this moment, I really want to thank Barbara Nimri Aziz of Tahrir, who you normally hear at this time, and later on, the Asia-Pacific Forum, which goes on at from 8 to 9, for providing us with this time to be with you today. We want to play an excerpt that links to 9/11 directly. And that was the setting up of the Al-Qaeda network and Osama bin Laden and his relationship to the CIA. So, Max, if you can go on and play track 6 from the CD.
Let's leave Italy for the moment, and let's go to Afghanistan. Again, we see the role of the Central Intelligence Agency and the U.S. capitalist ruling structure. In April of 1978, the People's Democratic Party of Afghanistan, the PDPA, came into power. Now, the PDPA, for all you can say about it, was committed to radical land reform, trade union rights, expansion of education and social services, and equality for women. But was most disturbing to the rulers in the United States was that the PDPA had close ties to the Soviet Union. Between 1978 and 1989, the U.S. waged a war against what President Ronald Reagan on March 8, 1985, later called the evil empire of the Soviet Union. Central to that was the destabilization of the USSR, and foremost in that game of destabilization was Afghanistan. The U.S. created what was called by Zbigniew Brzezinski a bear trap. And Zbigniew Brzezinski was Democratic Party U.S. President Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. But this policy was also continued by Brzezinski's successors. The aim, as I said, was to destabilize and break up the Soviet Union. For Brzezinski, Afghanistan was the gateway to the oil-rich Central Asian republics, which were pivotal, the Central Asian republics, the stans, Turkmenistan, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all the stans, the republics of the Soviet Union. And they were pivotal because they were a source of oil. But he also considered that Central Asia, what he called the grand chessboard, was pivotal in a worldwide control of resources as well as a gateway to China. And so between 1978 and 1992, the U.S. government poured at least $6 billion, and some estimates are as high as $20 billion, worth of arms, training, and funds to prop up what were called the Mujahideen factions, to bring down the PDA government and to attack Soviet troops that attempted to prop it. Now, it wasn't just the United States. There were other Western governments, as well as Saudi Arabia, the U.S.'s closest ally at the time, and they provided millions more. The United States run Radio Liberty, as well as Radio Free Europe, beamed Islamic fundamentalist tirades across Central Asia. But what were they doing inside Afghanistan? And who were the players besides Zbigniew Brzezinski, the mastermind of it all? Washington's favorite was Gulbuddin Hekmatyar, who, you may have heard, in the 1970s was known for throwing acid in the faces of women who refused to wear a veil. And when the Mujahideen eventually took Kabul in Afghanistan in 1992, Hekmatyar's forces rained U.S.-supplied missiles and rockets on the city, killing at least 2,000 people. And he did it until the government agreed that he would be prime minister. Now, aside from the U.S. and Saudi funds, Hekmatyar also funded his operation through opium cultivation and trafficking. And within 2 years, the Afghanistan-Pakistan border became the world's single largest source of heroin, supplying 60% of all drug users in the United States. Now remember, this is through the CIA-sponsored Hekmatyar. In 1995, the former director of CIA's operation in Afghanistan described the explosion in the flow of drugs. Quote, "Our main mission was to do as much damage as possible to the Soviets. There was a fallout in terms of drugs, yes, but the main objective was accomplished. The Soviets left Afghanistan," end quote. In fact, this drug operation was critical to the destabilization because it provided vast amounts of funds, much more than could come through the secret accounts of the CIA directly or the Defense Department or through the allocations of Congress, much as you had with the Contra network. You had here in Afghanistan a vast drug network that was funding the operations of the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, aside from Hekmatyar, who was key and influential to this operation? And I'm sure you know the answer. That was none other than Osama bin Laden. who came from the wealthy bin Laden family. The bin Laden family has the largest construction business in the world. And bin Laden was Hekmet Yar's closest associate. Ahmed Rashid, a correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review, described the plan in great detail in an article. In 1986, CIA Chief William Casey committed CIA support to a long-standing Pakistani intelligence plan. Now, the Pakistani intelligence is the ISI. And the plan was to recruit from around the world Mujahideen to join an Afghan jihad. At least 100,000 Islamic militants from 50 countries, according to this article in the Far Eastern Economic Review, flocked to Pakistan between 1982 and 1992, and 60,000 attended schools where they were trained by British MI6, SAS, that's the Special Air Service, known most of all for the terror operations it conducts for British imperialism in Northern Ireland. Now, the Muslims who were recruited from the United States, some went to Afghanistan, but others were sent to Camp Peary, the CIA's spy training camp right in Virginia. And there you had Afghans and Arabs from Egypt and Jordan, as well as African-American black Muslims. And they were taught sabotage skills. According to John Cooley, a former journalist with ABC Television Network and the author of Unholy Wars, Afghanistan, America, and International Terrorism, the program was called Operation Cyclone. The U.S. operatives were recruited at the Al-Kifa Refugee Center in Brooklyn, New York, and they were given paramilitary training in the New York area itself, before they were sent to Afghanistan to join Hekmet Yar's forces and Osama bin Laden's forces. Now, in Pakistan, the money and the equipment for these Mujahideen factions was distributed by a new organization called the Maktab al-Khidmat, the Office of Services, the MAK, and it was run by the ISI directly, with three people in charge, one of whom was Osama bin Laden, and by 1989 he was given overall control of the MAK. Now remember, this is Pakistan intelligence, British intelligence, and most of all, the Central Intelligence Agency in the United States, who primarily was directing the operations. One of the trainers in 1989 was Ali Mohammed, who happens to have been a Green Beret. Now, I mention specifically Ali Mohammed because his name again appears in 1998 because he was one of the people, the so-called terrorists, charged with the 1998 bombings of the U.S. Embassy in Kenya and Tanzania. Also trained by Ali Mohammed, the U.S. Green Beret, was El Said Nosar, who was tried with others for plotting to bomb New York landmarks, including the World Trade Center. This is a trial that took place after 1993. In 1986, to go back to bin Laden, he brought heavy construction equipment from Saudi Arabia to Afghanistan, because remember, the family is the largest construction company in the world, and he has close ties with the construction equipment. And he himself is an engineer, and he used his knowledge to construct the training camps that are funded through the drug money and run by British intelligence and the CIA. And these are the camps that, in the invasion of Afghanistan, the heavy camps that were dug deep into the sides of mountains that the U.S. sent its bunker-busting bombs to destroy. The very training camps built by the United States. These mercenaries, these people sent to destabilize Afghanistan, and destabilize Afghanistan they did. We must reiterate over and again that they were armed by the CIA. They were armed by the CIA directly and indirectly through the opium traffic. Pakistan, the United States, and Britain provided military trainers, and as well they received funding for all this armament from the U.S. close ally and collaborator, Saudi Arabia. Tom Carew, a former British SAS soldier who fought with the Mujahideen, told the August 13, 2000 British Observer, quote, "The Americans were keen to teach the Afghans the techniques of urban terrorism, car bombing, and so on, so they could strike at the Russians in major towns," end quote. By 1987 to 88, bin Laden changed the name of his organization to Al-Qaeda, the military base. And Vincent Canestrano, the former CIA chief of counterterrorism operations, comes into play at this point. Canestrano had been in charge of the CIA-backed Nicaraguan Contras during the early 1980s, and he was assigned by the National Security Council to use his expertise in Afghanistan. He was made the supervisor of covert aid to the Afghan Mujahideen. As the Wall Street Journal commented, quote, "The Taliban are the players crucial to serve the country as a prime transshipment route for the export of Central Asia's vast oil, gas, and natural resources," end quote.
Been listening to The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Our gift to you for your $100 contribution to WBAI 212-209-2950. And for an additional $50 for your $150 contribution, we offer you the bonus of The Technique of Infamy, Ralph Schoenman's commentaries on the official 9/11 commissions. That's 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, what we're talking about here is the saying of the American poet Ezra Pound, who said that the technique of infamy is to invent two lies and get people arguing heatedly over which one of them is true. What we're addressing here is the constant theme that is being orchestrated about the terrorists in one location or another, under one guise or another. We're going to take out this and take out that. And when we examine any specific one of these operations, the evidence demonstrates rather amply that these are what we call false flag operations, the hands of U.S. intelligence. From Remember the Maine, when the U.S. blew up its own ship in Havana Harbor to create the pretext for seizing the Philippines and Cuba, to the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, to the famous Operation Northwoods, which entails a plan hatched in the National Security Council by the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Lyman Limnitzer, and signed off on by every single member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, had called for the flying of hijacked airplanes into buildings and the killing of civilians in American cities and the blowing up of the rocket-carrying John Glenn astronaut, and imputing all of this to Fidel Castro and the Cuban Revolution to create the pretext for the invasion of Cuba. This in 1962 at the highest levels of authority. This is the pattern of state terror through false flag operations that has characterized every major imperial war that the U.S. has undertaken, and the intimidation of our public and the creation of a mindset of numbed acquiescence in long-prepared plans for imperial onslaught abroad and repression at home. We document it, we provide the data, we provide the analysis, we provide the political context, and above all, we summon our listeners to participate in the struggle and in the fight back and in the exposure of the lies and the bringing down of those who perpetrate them. We ask you to support this kind of programming, the information and the analysis, to keep free speech radio going, to speak truth to power, to sustain Taking Aim, to sustain WBAI. Buy the premiums, or rather contribute your contribution to the maintenance of the radio station and the programming, and obtain the premiums thereby.
212-209-2950. You know, several times each week we come up with something new, interesting, stripping away the falsehoods that we see in the official press, gathering the documentation so that we can put make some coherence out of the events unfolding, because they, in not only are they trying to destabilize countries, they're trying to pull the rugs out from under us here in the United States, to destabilize us too, so that people think that they have to be afraid that maybe they're being attacked by other people, when in fact, as we point out with these false flag operations, this is a pattern of state terror. It is the ruling class itself that is out to terrorize us, to prevent us from organizing, to prevent us from coalescing with our and building our organizations, and most importantly, to prevent us from having political power. 212-209-2950, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. Ralph?
Security scare shuts Kings Bay, the Florida Times-Union, on May 22nd. Kings Bay naval submarine base locked down for security reasons after Israelis were detained for questioning. Two Israeli men entering the base at 10:30 a.m., hired by a moving and storage company. Now, that is evocative of the moving company and the moving van operation that we've documented on Taking Aim, where Israeli Mossad and intelligence agents were, in fact, photographing and filming on video the World Trade Center towers there prior to the attacks, throughout the attacks, detained later by the FBI, found to be high-level Israeli Mossad operatives. Then we find there are hundreds of Israeli Mossad operatives assigned to take the cover of art students in Hollywood, Florida, at least 60 of them in operation there, alongside the Mohammed Atta, with whom they're in constant communication.
Ralph, that's the section of your presentation we're going to hear in just
the
a
evidence.
Moment. So back to the article in the recent news. It's amazing that you came across this.
Well, I mean, it's a constant, because what we're looking here is the Mossad CIA operation in 9/11 and the continuity of that. Because Maya, in 1993, the prototype of the attack on the World Trade Center in 9/11 occurred when the landmark case was also hatched. You have here another theme that comes up during the 9/11 hearings nonstop. In 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center and the landmark case. That brings us to the question of Lynn Stewart, a heroic defender of us all who's on trial in New York because she defended Sheikh Rahman, the blind Egyptian cleric, into whose mosque the FBI sent a high-level operative to seduce and recruit young men on a need-to-know basis and then propose on behalf of the FBI blowing up the World Trade Center, taking out the Brooklyn Bridge, the Lincoln Tunnel, the Holland Tunnel, George Washington Bridge, the Statue of Liberty, all of these false flag operations.
And there, too, Ralph, the Mossad was involved.
Uzi Hadass, the Mossad operative in charge of the safe house, arranging the Ryder rental van, a false flag operation that is the paradigm of the state terror that allows for permanent war and repression at home.
Now, before we go to Ralph's presentation, and you're missing marvelous material. So you must get the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. 212-209-2950. We can't see the lights lighting up, and we're assuming that you're calling because we receive so many messages from you and emails and telephone calls telling us how much you appreciate Taking Aim. And now we know that when you're the moment when you're needed to support WBAI, that you're going to be there for yourselves, actually, for you and your friends and your family and for those incarcerated in the prisons and the prison industrial complex of this country who depend on WBAI as their outlet to the world. 212-209-2950, the pattern of state terror, very special program of analysis and documentation that you're not going to hear elsewhere. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Well, the sustained pattern of state terror has been taken for granted by almost all of the established media, and consequently, every time the White House and the Pentagon and the National Security Council and the intelligence agencies float their next scare story, it is given headline treatment. Washington Post, the elections will be canceled in 2004. Los Angeles Times, suitcase nukes are expected to be the weapon of attack and will lead to the cancellation of the elections. Again, Newsweek, Newsday, USA Today, orchestrating the same theme.
And Ralph, remember Armageddon, the program of Rumsfeld and Cheney in preparation.
Well, not just, yes, as you say, Maya, and this is the March edition of the Atlantic Monthly, where the documentation was provided for a 24-year-old plan in which the appointment, as you say, were Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney, who met in bunkers and were twice a year on rehearsals with key national security figures to establish martial law and to take control of the United States, suspend the Constitution, outlaw and eliminate Congress, not the wet dream of right-wing marginal figures, but the actual state of operation plans of those at the point of power in the United States. Rumsfeld and Cheney, along with key national security and military and intelligence officials, rehearsing to take power, the Armageddon plan. And as the Atlantic Monthly concludes in its article, administrations may come and go, but the national security state apparatus remains permanent, a permanent instrument of class rule of the capitalist state in America. And then Nightline and ABC Television and Ted Koppel actually promotes the same Armageddon plan, interviewed some of the figures who are central to it, including Richard Clark, I have to add, who confirm that indeed the preparations were made for the cancellation of the elections and for the suspension of the Constitution and the elimination of Congress and the imposition of martial law. A theme that we find constantly being brought before us, because as the state finds itself imperiled by the very extremity of its acts against the mass of our people, it is fearful of our response. We have the obligation and the opportunity to mobilize in our vast numbers to resist this operation and to proclaim our own ability to advance our political agenda and to challenge these people for power.
And to do so intelligently, we need analysis and documentation. And that's why we prepare programs like the Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. For your donation of $100 to WBAI, 212-209-2950. Now, I hate promoting credit cards, but now is the moment to use your credit card and stage the payments of your contribution. $100 for the Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, and our bonus to you for a $150 contribution would be The Technique of Infamy, an hour-long commentary by Ralph on the 9/11 Commission that was produced by Bonnie Faulkner of KPFA's Guns and Butter. We want to thank again Tahrir, the producers of Tahrir, Barbara Nimni Aziz, and Asia Pacific Forum for allowing us to use their time being with you today. It's now 8 p.m. and this is WBAI 99.5 FM in the tri-state region of New York and on the internet at www.wbai.org. We want to thank Max, who came in to engineer, and all the staff at WBAI. Remember, without WBAI, you would be in the wilderness, dependent upon commercial radio, where you're going to get much falsification in terms of the analysis of the events of the day. 212-209-2950. That is the number to remember. You should know that number as well as you know your own and those of your parents and other loved ones. 212-209-2950. Keep those phones ringing. And we'll have the phones ringing a little longer and ring again, because we're going to go to part of Ralph's presentation, part you haven't heard, that where he deals with the cast of characters in the events of 9/11. 212-209-2950. Keep the people in the tally room. Keep them busy. They don't come in as volunteers to be sitting around and twiddling their thumbs. They're there to talk to you, to listen to your appreciation of taking AIM and WBAI, and to inform you about the many options aside from the premium and what you can do, as much as you can do. There is a way that you can contribute, from a $25 low-income contribution or a student contribution. You'll still be a member of WBAI, to the thousands of dollars that those of you who are able to contribute can and should, I'll say should, contribute to maintain Taking AIM and WBAI. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. I hear our phone ringing. Now I want to hear the WBAI phones ringing. Your $100 contribution for the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. And as a bonus for a $150 contribution or more, we add the Technique of Infamy, Ralph Schoeman's commentary with Bonnie Faulkner on the 9/11 Commission. These are high-quality CDs. Ralph?
The security scare that shuts Kings Bay is part of another pattern, because I mentioned the moving company that was the cover for the Mossad operations surrounding 9/11. I mentioned the role of Guzi Hadass in the 1993 events. Well, Rafi Eitan had sleepers, Israeli Mossad sleepers, in a white van that was picked up by the authorities with Israeli intelligence targeting the Sears Tower. And that is part of what we are confronted by. The false flag operations that were very well documented in the important books by the former colonel in the Mossad, Viktor Ostrovsky, by way of deception, and the other side of deception, and in the book by Ari Menashe called The Prophets of War, in which they demonstrate that some of the events that are constantly being sounded as examples of al-Qaeda were in fact Mossad and CIA operations. They include the bombing of the Lebel discotheque in Berlin, which was imputed to the Libyans and to al-Qaeda in conjunction with the Libyans, when in fact it was an operation of the Mossad itself. It includes the USS Cole. It includes the bombing of the embassy of the United States in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam. False flag operations, the hands of U.S. intelligence and the Mossad. These are the paradigms of the terror state, creating the pretext for permanent war, for trillions of dollars to be expended on the military. You know, it was recently disclosed by the Government Accounting Office, responsible for monitoring the funds of the Department of Defense. Its Chief Officer Robert J. Lieberman documented that in 1 year, the Pentagon lost $2.3 trillion. And over a sustained number of years, $7.6 trillion had no paper trail, could not be traced. And in essence, over $4 trillion over a period of 3 years, 1999, 2000, 2001, disappearing in offshore numbered accounts, simply looted. $1 trillion, brothers and sisters, is $1,000 a minute, every minute since the birth of Jesus. This is a rapacious gangster kleptocracy, this ruling class, this 1% of the population that owns 90% of the national wealth. It is a gangster state. It is the monopoly of the few that oppresses the many. And it's the documentation of their crimes that are necessary to sustain their rule that is the primary task of Taking AIM, and it is the vehicle of Taking AIM on Free Speech Radio, WBAI, that allows this information to come forward for truth to be spoken to power. Please sustain this broadcasting. Allow this information to continue to come to you. Call the numbers and get the premiums. Keep Free Speech Radio alive.
212-209-2950. And Max, let's go to tracks 4 and 5 of Ralph's presentation. Remember, these are presentations that we made at the first phase of the 9/11 inquiry that took place in San Francisco. Ralph is on his way very early in the morning to Toronto for the second phase. And the third phase, we both hope to be with you in New York. Max?
There have been, of course, trial runs. And not so trial run at that. You may recall that in 1993, the bombing of the World Trade Center was imputed to a blind Egyptian cleric. But it's been amply documented and established now in the Los Angeles Times and the New York Times and the Village Voice and the Dallas Muslim Monitor that in 1993, a Federal Bureau of Investigation informant, rather high level, named Imad Ali Salem, who was also with Egyptian intelligence, went to the mosque of the blind Egyptian cleric and began to recruit young men on a need-to-know basis. He provided the funds. He provided what would become the dynamite. He wore wire through every one of these meetings. He transcribed each of these meetings, and 50 file boxes of documents were in the offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation for 6 months preceding the event. And then Imad Ali Salem organized with a particular individual the safe house, the rider rental van, the funding of same, and that was Guzi Hadass of the Mossad. Interestingly, the Israeli intelligence services Matara, their news outlet, had actually circulated particulars about the 1993 event prior to its occurrence. It's documented in the Israeli press. The landmark case, of which the attorney Lynn Stewart is now the victim as the representative of the blind sheikh, is of particular interest. Because Imad Ali Salem projected blowing up the Brooklyn Bridge, the Holland Tunnel, the Lincoln Tunnel, the George Washington Bridge, and the Statue of Liberty. A series of provocations that once again stemmed from the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Richard Bernstein, on the first anniversary of 9/11, wrote an article in the New York Times informing us that the linchpin for 9/11 was indeed the 1993 bombing. He said that Ramzi Youssef was in close conjunction with those who were preparing the bombing in 1993. Ramzi Youssef, indeed. It is a linchpin, because it shows the hand of U.S. intelligence in a classic false flag operation. There would be a series of television broadcasts, strangely enough, by Fox Television News, by Carl Cameron and Britt Hume, which would expose the role of the Mossad in the events that we're describing. 60 Israelis were detained in relation to the events of 9/11, 200 Mossad operatives with prior knowledge. In the course of this investigative report by Fox News, they established that all directory assistance calls and all call records in the United States are carried out by Amdocs, an Israeli company tied to Israeli intelligence. In 1999, the super-secret National Security Agency in Maryland noted that all calls in the U.S. passed through Israeli intelligence hands. Now this, of course, with the full acquiescence and connivance of the authorities here. The assignments, then, for a specific series of operations that the national security state in the United States was undertaking were assignments to the Mossad and to Israeli intelligence. NSA briefing on the FBI and the CIA established that through Amdocs, Mossad operatives were being put into motion. Communications of the FBI, Secret Service, DEA, and indeed in the Los Angeles Police Department were processed through the Mossad, according to the investigative report on Fox News. And they found as well that U.S. investigators found that Mossad operatives were not only deploying Amdocs, but the Converse information system, an Israeli-run telecommunications firm with offices throughout the United States, which provides wiretapping equipment, and was in fact the device for a series of intelligence operatives from the Mossad who were spread across the United States, as many as 60 of them in Hollywood, Florida, where they were based a few doors down from the residence of Mohammed Atta. Under the 1994 Kalea Communications Assistance for Law Enforcement, Converse was established as a backdoor for all U.S. police and intelligence communications through the Mossad and Israeli intelligence, according to Fox News. Well, you may recall as well on Frontline and on ABC the series of reports about the Urban Moving Company systems. The Israelis, who were found filming the World Trade Center for hours prior to the detonation of those planes, and subsequently arrested in relation to this event, all of them then returning to Israel, where they were acknowledged to be military and Mossad intelligence operatives. And indeed, in addition to this, a series of these operatives were found near the Sears Tower, videoing the Sears Tower, apparently in the expectation that one of the airplanes was intended to take out the Sears Tower as well. This elaborated upon both in Le Monde and in Fox News. Carl Cameron reports, December 12, 2001. What did the Mossad know in advance about September 11th and not pass on to the USA? Fox News. And proceeds to look at this. It states that a group of Israeli operatives spotted in North Carolina maintaining residences throughout the United States and California were in close proximity to Arabs suspected of being involved in, quote, terrorist activity, unquote. And in fact, it was not just a question of proximity. There was a constant interaction. This goes to the question of who indeed are the operatives who were accused of hijacking the airplanes. Mohammed Atta, for example. But as we know, Mohammed Atta and his colleagues were trained, according to Newsweek again and the Washington Post, at the International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama, Mohammed Atta, at the Aerospace Medical School at Brooks Air Force Base, Texas, Abdulaziz Alomari, and indeed at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, Saeed Alhamdi. This series of exposés would lead Stephen Butler, who was in charge at Monterey, not only to author a letter accusing the Bush administration of complicity in the events of 9/11, but to insist that they should be prosecuted. Le Monde, an enigma, vast Israeli spy network in the United States, February, March 5th, 2002. The Mossad, a 61-page report on 120 Israeli nationals made up of agents working with the DEA, INS, FBI, and U.S. Air Force. Not the first time that information relating to Israeli espionage, but that in conjunction with Division 5 of the FBI, has reached public notice. From December 11th to 14th, 2001, the Fox News television channel aired in four parts the function of this espionage in the United States and its relation to such organizations as the Jewish Institute for National Security Affairs, JINSA, which would subsequently be written up in some detail by Jason Vest in The Nation as an arena in which the category of terror and the designs for such events as 9/11 were both rationalized and hashed out. Mohammed Atta, Desmond Butler, writing again in the New York Times, Germans tracking September 11th conspirators as early as 1998. Not just tracking, funding. Mohammed Atta has been presented to us as a figure deeply embedded with the Al-Qaeda apparatus. A man who was so devoted to the fundamentalist vision of Islam that he was monomaniacal in his pursuit. The problem with this, apart from the interview that his father gave after the events of 9/11, in which he acknowledged that he had spoken to his son on September 12th, Newsweek, was that the young man who was described by the rather prominent attorney in Cairo, his father, bore no remote relation to the Mohammed Atta that was presented to us. And in relation to that, I should point out that Newsweek again and MSNBC carried a report which described Mohammed Atta and his associates, where they were partying, with whom they were seen, and their predilection for doing lines of cocaine and drinking Stolichnaya and fruit juice. And they described a particular incident, well witnessed, at a bar called Shuckum's, in which Atta and his friends became agitated, shouting curse words in Arabic, including a particular blasphemous one, Newsweek reports, that translates roughly as fuck God. There was a squabble when a waitress attempted to collect a $48 bill, and Mohammed Atta became indignant. I work for American Airlines. I'm a pilot. I have responsibilities. What makes you think I have a problem paying this bill? We're looking here at the classic paradigm of a false flag operation. We're dealing here with intelligence operatives with false personae. You will recall, of course, that in the devastation of the World Trade Center, when we're told that a hydrocarbon fire was capable of disintegrating the concrete and glass into powder of both towers, the passport of Mohammed Atta floated in the wind, landed intact in the rubble to be disclosed. Talk about insulting our intelligence. Yes, false flag operations.
You've been listening to The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. We've been playing an excerpt from a presentation by Ralph Schoenman at Phase 1 of the 9/11 inquiry that took place in San Francisco in March. And it is yours for a $100 contribution to WBAI 212-209-2950. Now, Max has given me the sad news that the phones have been slow. I know some of you may have expected to listen to us at 5 o'clock, and hopefully those of you who are on the air are calling your friends and letting everyone know that we are on today. And the program started late, but we did get on, so please let everyone know that they can participate in this unique programming, The Pattern of State Terror, from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950. In the next 35 minutes, let's quicken the pace. Let's demonstrate how taking aim is so key and crucial to moving forward all our agenda. 212-209-2950. Russ?
Gulf War 3 by Gordon Prather. The Likud and its supporters in the United States are preparing an Israeli preemptive strike against Iranian facilities and programs, all now subject to the International Atomic Energy Safeguards Agreement. When President Bush and Israeli Prime Minister Sharon got together, they discussed taking out Iran's nuclear weapons program. There doesn't seem to be much doubt in Washington. The article of May 24th continues that the Iranian operation will be taken out, the presumptive operation. And this is indeed part of the pattern of preparing us for permanent war.
Well, it's also the pattern of the Israelis, how they, remember, they struck against the Iraqi nuclear power plant.
Yes, and indeed it's a casus belli that they contrive because, as we are well aware, the most dominant nuclear power in the region is that of the Israelis themselves. And Mordecai Vanunu's case illustrative of that, when Mordecai had in fact exposed the Israeli nuclear program
at Dimona,
which includes the dirty bombs and the neutron weapons that had been tested in a whole series of locations in Africa and other places, for which he was kidnapped and sentenced to 18 years for publishing this information in the London Sunday Times.
And now released, he's been told that he'd be back in solitary confinement should he talk to the press and reveal information. 212-209-2950. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. We could actually say from 9/11 to Madrid and beyond. 212-209-2950. Remember, we can put a stop to this. Only we can put a stop to it, and WBAI is a critical tool in our liberation. 212-209-2950.
We tend to be hypnotized, brothers and sisters, by the vast and brutal and essentially proto-fascist exercise of power by this gangster clique that constitutes our ruling class. Again, it was acknowledged and revealed by the New York Times to be more than 1% of the population owning 90% of the national wealth. But it was examined and parsed a little more closely than that by Robert Townsend, who was the former president of Avis and of American Express, as he described in his book, Up the Organization, those who have control over the commanding heights of the United States economy number approximately 5,000 people. They look upon the country as their own private whorehouse, and they treat each president, regardless of whom, as their towel boy, Robert Townsend. That is an apt description of the concentrated power of this extraordinarily small number of people who have control over the banks and corporate institutions of the United States. They've hijacked the state. They use our labor to subsidize their operations and to sustain their profits, as they wage class war and drive down our living standards, slashing and destroying our social services, eliminating our health care, eliminating affordable housing, destroying the schools and the libraries and all the social services in our society as they cannibalize the infrastructure of our country. That is why a 9/11 is required, because of the addiction to arms and permanent war of this desperately degenerating ruling class and their system incapable of meeting the most elementary needs of human beings. I've shared with some of you before the fact that years ago I had the privilege of working with Malcolm X during 1964 and the first part of 1965. Malcolm, when he was in Africa, was poisoned in Cairo and Accra by the Central Intelligence Agency. But he survived. When he was in London, my friend Kojo Amu Godfrey, who was then the head of the youth organization of the Convention People's Party of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana, Kojo and I drove Malcolm to the airport, and we were frantic. We pleaded with Malcolm to wear a bulletproof vest. Malcolm said to us at the time, "Bulletproof vests won't do. The task is to build that movement of the many, to organize, to mobilize, to bring together all those who are exploited and oppressed. Begin that mobilization that will challenge for power our oppressors so that the decapitation of our movement cannot stand in the way of its unfolding." And I'm going to quote here one of the last speeches and the remarks that Malcolm made when he addressed an audience in New York at the Audubon Ballroom on December 13, 1964. Malcolm said, "You and I live in a very deceitful and tricky society, in a very deceitful and tricky country, that has a very deceitful and tricky government. You have to be on guard at all times. You have to know how they work this deceit and how they work their tricks The FBI feeds information to the press, and they do it very skillfully. They maneuver the press on a national scale while the CIA maneuvers the press on an international scale. They master this imagery, this image-making. They create the image of the extremist. And when we explode legitimately against injustice that has been heaped upon us, why, they use the press to make it look like it's we who are the vandals. You let this man maneuver you into thinking that it is wrong to fight him when he's fighting us. He's fighting us in the morning. He's fighting us at noon. He's fighting us at night. And he's fighting us all in between. And you still think it's wrong to fight him back? American planes dropping bombs on African villages that have no defense against bombs and blowing black women to bits, and they're doing the same thing as when they dropped it on the Japanese at Hiroshima. And they take their press with their ability to control us with image making, and they make mass murder, cold-blooded murder, look like a humanitarian project. And all these thousands of people die across the world, and we have no compassion in our hearts because the victim has been made to look like the criminal, and the criminal is made to look like the victim. Why, you and I, brothers and sisters, should go on a rampage. And I mean on a rampage intelligently, unquote, Brother Malcolm. It's not the crisis which is new, brothers and sisters, nor is it the evil which has changed. It's simply that this generation, like those before us, confront the same system of control, of exploitation, of suppression, of brutalization, with their lies and with their unrestricted violence and control. Free Speech Radio is about exposing this reality and about mobilizing the resistance and about fulfilling Malcolm's vision of a vast and mass movement that will answer these people, because we cannot influence them, and we cannot change them, and we cannot persuade them, and we cannot control them or contain them. But what we can do is remove them. And that's the movement we have to build. That's the task of this kind of broadcasting, to arm us with the information sufficient to the task.
212-209-2950. If you're just tuning in, I'm Maya Schoen, and this is
Ralph Schoenman.
And we produce Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen. We're on Tuesdays at 5, from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m., and we can be heard on the Internet at www.wbai.org. We've produced over 120 shows since the end of December of 2001, and Ralph produced the five-hour World Trade Center Uncensored History in a month after the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon. And at that time, he disclosed that this was a false flag operation. 212-209-2950. This is the best gift you can give yourselves. Donate to WBAI. Maintain the station. It isn't often that we come on air and speak with you and remind you that WBAI is listener-supported. Listener-supported has a very deep and significant meaning. It's not the commercial corporations, the multinationals sweeping throughout the world, destroying the collective organizations of the working class, the trade unions, that's organizations such as Walmart or Kmart, or any of the other large corporations paying near slave wages, forcing people to have multiple jobs. The 8-hour day, a figment of the past. 212-209-2950. It is your opportunity to take a step towards the organization of the working peoples of this country and of the world. 212-209-2950. And what we have for you is a gift. The gift is the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid for your contribution of $100. For a $150 contribution, we have the bonus of the Technique of Infamy, Ralph Schoenman's commentary on the official 9/11 Commission hearings. 212-209-2950. If you're new to Taking Aim, we hope you will tune in next week. Not next week, but in 2 weeks. Next week will be preempted for a WBAI special. But the week after, when we'll be back with our regular programming, Meanwhile, this is your opportunity, and it's your only and it's your last opportunity to have the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. We've only been able to play little excerpts. And for those of you who like to tape WBAI programming, you'll have bits and pieces, but the only way to have the entire story, the detailing of what went on in Italy, the setting up of the Gladio network, of what went on in Afghanistan, of what went on with the attacks on the World Trade Center, the only way to have this combination and also the historical perspective that Ralph provides in the beginning of his presentation is with your donation to WBAI. The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950. Ralph?
This is the programming that sustains truth to power, as I say. We have been documenting the hand of the state in the events that are attributed to demonic others. That's the pattern of the ruling class, of looking for victim peoples on whom to project their own deeds, and to use this method in order to intimidate us, to dissemble and to confuse, and to work their deceitful ways, as Malcolm so amply described it. It's indeed interesting that the preparations for this direct seizure of oil in the Arab East go back to 1964, when every successive administration had made plans, operational plans, to invade the Middle East and to seize the oil directly. By the 1970s, when the Israeli Mossad was preparing a document called the Strategy for the 1980s, which called for the fragmentation of each Arab country into its ethnic and religious components, the Pentagon's plans were put into play. By 1975, the Pentagon, with Colonel John Collins, a senior specialist in national defense, 18 years, put forward a plan for oil fields as a military objective, a feasibility study. By 1977, April 25th, President Jimmy Carter had issued a secret presidential directive, PD-18, calling for the preparation of quick strike forces of divisions capable of rapid intervention in the Middle East to seize the oil-producing regions of the Gulf. It was called by Pentagon analyst Robert Tucker a new El Dorado awaiting its conquistador. These plans, seizing Arab oil, in Harper's Magazine in 1975 by Miles Ignotis, which was the pseudonym for the Pentagon DIA consultant Edward Litvak, put forward the necessity for seizing directly the oil of the Gulf and of Mesopotamia, namely Iraq. And how were they going to sell this to the American people? In 1979, Lauren Moshe formulated this in many Washington corridors, what military people call the 100,000-man quick strike force, consisting of multiple divisions rapidly deployable, are preparing for seizing oil. We need a boogeyman to come in and have to be stopped before we can sell the quick strike force. And it may turn out that that boogeyman is not defined the same in Arabic as in English. A document disclosed in Middle East International on January 19th, 1979. Brothers and sisters, the pattern is clear. The evidence is overwhelming. This is the false flag operation of U.S. rulers. From there to 9/11, from the first Gulf War to the second Gulf War, to the third World Gulf War in preparation, to the present devastation of the people of Iraq, through the torture system which is endemic to imperialism and has always characterized its rule, from the torment of the Filipino people at the turn of the last century, to the conduct of the war in Vietnam with the systematic electric torture and the cutting off of noses and ears, which were worn as necklaces around the necks of the special forces across Indochina, to what we are now seeing the little glimpse of, the little bit of the reality of the torture and the torment of from Guantanamo Bay to Bagram in Afghanistan to Al-Gharib in Iraq. This is the reality of imperial rule, and this is the evidence that we seek to bring to bear, and this is the programming that we provide on a systematic basis, and this is the reason why we ask you to support Taking Aim, Free Speech Radio, WBAI.
If I may just interrupt for 1 second, we are rather short-handed for volunteers, so if anyone can get down here this evening, Bernard White will be coming up at 9 o'clock with a special, and we could certainly use one or two additional people to help handle some of these calls. So if you are near 120 Wall Street, we're on the 10th floor, bring a picture ID to enter the building, but if one or two folks could come come on down. We sure could use your help.
I hope that's a response, Max, to the volume of calls.
Well, yes, actually, the rate has picked up. And if you'd
that's
like...
That's what we want to hear.
If you'd like, I could thank a few of the people who have called so far.
Well, by all means, please. We always like to acknowledge our hearers, our listeners. And, Max, if I could just mention that we have a lot of listeners who are in prisons in New York and in New Jersey and in Connecticut, in this vast prison industrial complex, that the criminalization of poverty, and we so welcome our prisoner listeners who we know, they, from their own experience, understand what this system is. We always get this programming to them without cost. Please allow us to continue to do this. Maya and I are not doing this for coin, you know. We are volunteers. We produce these shows because out of political conviction and out of commitment, as do the people who are bringing programming to you from the station.
212-209-2950. If you get a busy signal, try again.
And speaking of prisons, up in Ossining, we have Gloria Jara, who wants to inform the world that there are meetings at 4 to 7 p.m. on Wednesdays, or actually, I guess, tomorrow, community organizer for laborers at the Ossining Public Library. So for her pledge, she got that announcement in. And Ted Robinson, thank you, from Newark. And Leonard Corwin of Lawrenceville, New Jersey. Thank you so much. 212-209-2950. Zayed Ramjan of Hempstead. Thank you. And Dorothy Dalskob of Hoboken, New Jersey. Many calls from New Jersey tonight. Aren't we reaching New York tonight? Ronald Persaud of Westbury, New York. Thank you. Sharon Sockwell of Brooklyn. So, okay, the signal is reaching to Brooklyn. And Nancy Curry, we're getting out to Connecticut as well. Thanks to all of you, and we'll maybe get one more round of names in before we wrap up the program. I've seen many calls come in, but the tally has not gone up. So I think with the fact that there are only two people in the room back there may have an impact on us seeing the results of some of these phone calls. 212-209-2950.
Okay, since there are only two people, remember, if you get a busy signal...
Well, there's no busy, but they may not pick it up right away. So
okay, remember,
keep ringing.
Keep letting it ring.
And all of you out there, like the sister who has the labor meeting, remember, www.civilianworkermarch.org. Go to the website. See the mobilization across the country. Bring a million workers to Washington on October 16th. We're mobilizing around our own agenda for health care, for free housing, for free public school education, for slashing the military budget, for eliminating the Patriot Act, for canceling the so-called free trade agreements that that are outsourcing our jobs and creating labor conditions which are slave labor and sweatshop conditions across the world. The fight back, brothers and sisters. That's what the programming is about. The struggle for removal of the criminal class, the ruling class, whatever nominal party is in office without power, it's that permanent class that oppresses us. We have to mobilize in our own name. Free Speech Radio is about preparing us for that struggle, informing us about what we need to know, and arming us for the critical political battles ahead.
Remember, this is your last opportunity during this fundraiser for the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, and to show your appreciation of taking aim. 212-209-2950. For your contribution of $100, we have the two CD set, The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid. For a $150 contribution, your generous contribution, we add the bonus CD, The Technique of Infamy, Ralph Schoenman's commentary on the official 9/11 Commission hearing. I also want to thank at this time those of you who write to us and point out articles that we may have missed and that you noted in the press throughout the world. For instance, he didn't say I could mention his name, so I won't, but MS sent me on May 20th something from the Associated Press. Are you a potential terrorist? That's right. The question is, as I noted before with DEPCA, where in Europe anybody in the coffee shop is considered a possible terrorist with the white conscript army. Here we have, in the United States, the matrix system, which Ralph Schoenman and I have
discussed on prior Taking Aim programs, the Matrix, a database contractor, gave the United States and Florida authorities the names of 120,000 people, 120,000 people who showed a statistical likelihood of being terrorists. And this sparked investigations and arrests. They gave high terrorism factor scoring system, and this was Cisint, S-E-I-S-I-N-T, Inc., and they developed the Matrix Project. Remember, and Matrix stands, by the way, for Multi-State Anti-Terrorism Information Exchange. It combines state records and data culled by Cisint that gave investigators access to information, and from that they developed profiles of who were terrorist suspects, and on the basis of these profiles, these hypothetical profiles, police and the FBI went out and they questioned and arrested people. They stimulated, they triggered investigations and arrests, and also this was done by the INS, imagine, the Immigration Authorities. And this, we have to put a stop, and that's why on Taking Aim, we have focused in on this terror, information terror apparatus that has been part of the Defense Department, the Homeland Security Department, 212-209-2950, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid. And we thank all of you who send us information such as MS did. Are you a potential terrorist? We saw from the Associated Press. Now we have 15 minutes to go, or less than 15 minutes to go in this program, when WBAI will bring you another special with Bernard White. So get on the phone. Remember, if the phones keep ring, just let them ring, ring, ring. Somebody will pick up the phone. Ralph, we could play a little bit of the next portion, or we can talk. The next portion is 13 minutes, and then we wouldn't have time to speak to the listeners. So,
Maya, I was going to mention that one of the classic examples of disinformation, which has been most recently presented to us, and the timing is very obvious to all our listeners, I'm sure, right at the height of the expose of the unspeakable torture and torment that is inflicted upon the detainees and the imprisoned, and 90% of those who are detained, as the Red Cross disclosed, are not even part of the resistance in Iraq. They're random people, they're random civilians, they're random citizens that have been picked up. 90% of those detained and are being subjected to this unspeakable sensory deprivation, rape, bodily violation, sexual abuse, and electrical torture are people who don't even have a political activist part in the resistance to the occupation. A resistance which is every bit as legitimate as any other struggle for national independence and national sovereignty.
And Ralph, the Washington Post, I want to say, has put up the original declarations made by some of the people who you see in the photos that were released by the New Yorker. So if you go to the Washington Post, you can see the firsthand documents, statements of the torture.
Well, here's the point I was trying to make about this. At the height of the expose of the torture photographs and the torture testimony and the torture videos and the amplification of the fact that this is right from the top and has been part of official policy and is indeed the very integument of the counterinsurgency operation of the special forces that is inflicted on countries across the world, they produced the beheading of Nicholas Berg, imputed to a group that was also accused of calling on Sunni and Shia to begin a civil war and killing each other in Iraq, right at the height of the uprising in Fallujah and in Najaf and in Karbala. So once again, at the height of the expose of the photos and the torture evidence, they produce a video of Nicholas Berg being beheaded. But on examination, the evidence is becoming very clear. Towards the end of the video, at frames 9306 through 9368, we see a person in a U.S. military cap, a quarter of his left head visible on the video when the video is played at high speed. It is evident, it is demonstrated, it is clear. And then beyond that, it is established that the surroundings, this was a video actually taking place inside Abu Ghraib itself. And the chair on which Nicholas Berg is seated is the identical chair that is found in the torture videos where Iraqi prisoners were, in fact, put onto chairs as they were being tortured with electricity. Many of the videos released show the identical chair, and the evidence about the contrivance of this is so overwhelming that the CNN and Fox News themselves have had to acknowledge that the video is called into doubt and as to its accuracy. And finally, the person on whom this event is fathered, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, according to the evidence, al-Zarqawi was killed in bombings of the United States many months before. Associated Press has established that al-Zarqawi is not alive, that al-Zarqawi was killed, and the organization of which al-Zarqawi was a part has issued an official statement stating that al-Zarqawi has been dead. And so once again we see the false flag operation. Nicholas Berg was killed, all right, in U.S. custody, but imputing this to demonic others is part of the pattern of the terrorist state. And again, there is the physical and the medical evidence that was revealed and unearthed by a medical doctor and surgeon in Mexico City, who, upon examining with care the medical tape, disclosed that this could not have been a beheading because the process of beheading causes instant and multiple pumping out spurts of blood in all directions. None of this occurred. This is a contrivance. This is a fabrication. This is a psyops operation. This is the false flag. This is the paradigm of the terror state, the disinformation, the attempts to corral our understanding, to cow our psyche, and to conceal the truth.
And that is the content of our premium, The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950. We're going to continue talking rather than play a further excerpt of the program. You've heard quite a few excerpts last week and this week. Now's the time to make the telephone call. The Pattern of State Terror from 9/11 to Madrid, where we trace the roots of the operations in Madrid to what took place in Italy. Operations that started right after World War II, initiated by CIA Director Alan Dulles. The Stay Behind Network, which later became the Operation Gladio. And it didn't just take place in Italy, it was throughout Europe. And as I said, it's the modus operandi for Madrid. 212-209-2950. Let's look a little bit at some of the torture that has gone on in Abu Ghraib, has gone on in Guantanamo, and in Bagram. Granier, one of the military police, who also is a prison guard in the United States, he was pointed specifically in one of the testimonies that were taken, and the translation reads about when they tortured a man, Assad, they took their gloves off and they beat him on the testicles with the gloves, and they handcuffed him to the cell door for half a day without food or water. After that, they brought young Iraqi prisoners, and Granier tortured them by pouring water on them from the second floor until one of them started crying and screaming and started saying, "My heart." They brought the doctors to treat him, and they thought he was going to die. After that, they brought six people, and they beat them up until they dropped on the floor, and one of them, whose nose was cut and the blood was running from his nose, and he was screaming, but no one responded. Finally, a doctor came to stitch the nose, and Granier asked the doctor to teach him how to stitch. And yes, it's true. He then went, and this is a man who's not a medically trained person, he then took the string and the needle, and he finished the stitching. Ralph?
Well, this is one example of a pattern of torture, but the perhaps the most fiendish of the torture that is the constant in all of the interrogation centers, which are really concentration camps, is sensory deprivation. Try to imagine what it means to have a bag over your head and it tied at the neck, not for a few hours, but for weeks and even months. And then to be locked in total isolation cells where you have no contact with other human beings, no sounds, no distractions, nothing. Either total darkness or bright lights. And this is a routine. This is the pattern of the... It's really nothing more than the concentration behavior of the SS. And it is not a matter of random individuals, as we have been documenting so amply. Indeed, the established press has made it very clear. This proceeds from the top. These are war criminals that occupy the positions of authority in the United States. They are every bit as much war criminals as those who were tried in Nuremberg, and they are every much as much deserving of the fate of those who were convicted there.
That's right, and this goes on. The testimonies that you can read on the Washington Post website are about the sodomizing, sticking people's head in urine bags. It's just all the torment that is written about in mild ways in the newspapers. You can actually read the descriptions themselves. But meanwhile, we urge you, call WBAI 212-209-2950. We assure you, as those of you who've donated and acquired our premiums in the past, this is something that will stay in your library, that you will want to share with friends and family. The pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, 212-209-2950.
Because we are now in the presence of a system that is so advanced in its decomposition, in its degeneracy, and its inability to meet the most elementary needs of human beings across the planet. The very essence of life is people are deprived of food and of shelter. Iraqi workers are now reduced to 25 cents a day. The pattern of imperialism is to exploit in ever increasing and intensifying ways, and that is the precise pattern that is unfolding within our frontiers in the United States. And as this process unfolds, increasing numbers of people are seized with the understanding that this is a system that cannot be tolerated. And indeed, no system historically can sustain itself when it is so utterly incapable of meeting the needs and expectations of vast masses of people. Whatever apparent power they may have in the moment, every minute of every day, they are opening the eyes of the many who they abuse. As we say, the longer you con people, the madder they are when they find it out. Let's speed up that process of people finding out about the con, brothers and sisters. Sustain Free Speech Radio. Support Taking Aim. Keep the message alive. Call in for your premium, and let's keep this programming on a permanent basis.
212-209-2950. The volunteer on the phone will tell you about other ways that you can sustain WBAI, but meanwhile, we urge you, contribute for the premium, the pattern of state terror from 9/11 to Madrid, and for the additional $50 bonus, the technique of infamy, Ralph Schoenman's commentary on the 9/11 commission hearings. We've enjoyed being with you today, and remember, next week we will there'll be a special, and we'll be with you the week after for resuming Taking Aim programming at 5 p.m. You can reach us at 707-552-9995 or by email at takingaim at wbai.org, and our website is www.takingaim.info, yes, .info, where you'll find an archive of our programs, thanks to Mark Bilk and Pamela Summers, who have generously volunteered of their time so that we can have a Taking Aim website.
And all of you, brothers and sisters, in your trade union locals and in your activist organizations and in your communities and your churches and your mosques and your synagogues and wherever you are, go to the website of the Million Worker March, www.millionworkermarch.org. Join the mass movement, the mobilization, the March on Washington on October 16th, Million Worker March. Thanks, brothers and sisters.